Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Up Front with Gabby Agbon-Lahore and me, Sam Matterface, on TalkSport. This is the show that takes you into the world of the number nine as we find out what it takes to be a top-flight striker. We'll discuss their career-defining goals, being a one-club player, and how it felt to score for their boyhood team.
Now Ashley Young. Great cross, Agbon-Lahore's touch! 4 minutes to go, and this time Aston Villa might have won it. And it's a lifelong Aston Villa supporter.
You're listening to Up Front with Gabby Agbon-Lahore and me, Sam Matterface, on TalkSport. My guest today is not a one-club man exactly. Briefly experienced loan spells at Watford and Sheffield Wednesday, but with 391 out of his 401 club appearances coming for the Villa, it would be churlish to suggest that he is anything other than a villain through and through. A pacey striker who burst onto the scene at 19, scoring on his debut. He went on to win three England caps, an FA Cup runners-up medal, a League Cup runners-up medal as well. Hello, Gabriel Agbon-Lahore.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. You're only 33. Why are you not still playing?
A lot of people ask this question, and the best way to explain it is, for one, I didn't want to play for another team apart from Aston Villa, but what comes with that as well is that at that same time where I didn't have a new contract at Aston Villa, at around that time, that season, I was getting a lot of injuries. I was pulling my calf all the time. I was pulling my hamstrings. It was this calf, this hamstring. My body felt so sore after training. It felt like I played a game after training. And it was sort of the time where, like, I know it was probably a bit early. I was like 31, nearly 32, but my body was just telling me that basically, you've got mileage on the clock. Do you know what I mean? It's hard to explain. It's like my body was just saying, like, you can't do the things that you were doing when you were younger. And I think I relied a lot on my pace. So once that started to go a little bit, it was more like, okay, maybe I'm not going to be able to play at the level I want to play at. And then for me, it was, do I want to go down to League 1? Do I want to go down to League 2? It's not being arrogant. It's just the thought of going down to them leagues when I've been playing 11, 12 years in the Premier League. It's just something that I couldn't see myself doing, to be honest.
Do you think that because you started so early and got into the first team so young, that had an effect?
100%. I mean, it's not just me, you know. You see a lot of players that get to 30, 31, and, you know, they're not the same player they was. I remember I was playing the first three, four seasons, I was playing every game. You know, I'm not even resting a minute in a lot of them seasons. And I think it just took its toll on my body, you know. At that last season, I was just like, my body just felt old. It's hard to explain. Yeah. I think other players will understand that, like, your body just, like, not recovering. You're playing a game Saturday and Monday, when everyone else is out there running around, you're, like, crawling out onto the training. You're trying to hide the fact that your body's, like, in pieces still. While the players are recovering, you're, like, crawling out to the training ground. And I just knew, to be honest, my body was letting me down. I was getting a lot of injuries. I didn't deserve a new contract at Aston Villa because of how much I didn't play much that season. And my agent come to me with offers abroad, but with kids, it's hard, you know. I think because I'm so close with my kids, the thought of my son starting secondary school and me not being there on his first day and me being in China, Thailand or India, do you know what I mean? It wasn't something that I could do. Australia, do you know, like, finishing training and FaceTiming your kids once a day, like, it's just not something that I could have done. There was offers, but I think I made the right decision, and even now I look back 2 years after the last time I played, I still think that like I made the right decision. I don't have any regrets. You know, some players will play till they're 38, 39, they can't walk, and they're going down the league just because they want to carry on playing. But for me, it was, I couldn't see myself on a Tuesday night playing at, no offence, at maybe a League One or League Two stadium. You're getting abuse because of the high standard you played at and the standard you're at now. Do you know what I mean? I just couldn't put myself through that. I know what I'm like. I know that like I need to be playing in like a top league to have the hunger, to have the drive. So I didn't think it'd be fair to go to a lower league team and then not give them 100%, which I know that I wouldn't have been able to do.
How would Gabby Bonlahor describe himself as a forward? What sort of forward were you?
I'd describe myself as a pacey, a very, very quick forward who could score goals. Wasn't clinical, but could score goals, you know. So could score any type of goal from outside the box, tap-ins, one-on-ones. But people forget, though, I played more than half the games in my career as a left winger.
What did you like about being the centre forward?
I always watched Thierry Henry. I was obsessed with him as a kid. You know, I was a Villa fan, but I was also an Arsenal fan because of Thierry Henry.
Gilberto for Henry. Running at Harman and away from him. And running at Carragher and away from him. Still, Thierry Henry! Fantastic goal! Absolutely brilliant from Henry!
So I always tried to stay on the left-hand side. You know, as Thierry Henry did.
Yeah,
I used to like to make my channel runs onto the left-hand side. Like, if you looked at maybe my heat map over the years, I was always on the left-hand side. It was like the right-hand side, it wasn't a go-to. Do you know what I mean? It was like I was obsessed with the left-hand side to try and get that chance of cutting in and bending it like Thierry Henry did. I mean, I scored a few goals with that sort of side foot from that angle with Thierry Henry used to score, and I was obsessed with that. So it was just something that I liked. And I think with my pace, I think I was a nightmare for defenders. You know, defenders used to hate playing against me because they sort of knew that the run was going to be made when the midfielder or the left-back had the ball, but it's a run that if you left space in behind, I'd always cherish on. And then if I got the right ball, I'd be in on goal. If I didn't get the right ball, I'd hold it up and play it back to the likes of Ashley Young, who would then go and do his stuff and I'd get in the box. So it was just something that I really enjoyed playing as a striker on that left-hand side and getting into channels, you know, getting in behind.
Did you develop as you went on then? Did you get better as you went on?
It's crazy. I learnt a lot of coaches, but I learnt a lot from other Premier League players.
Really?
As crazy as it sounds. So every game you played, you learnt more. You played against the great Chelsea teams, the great Man United teams, the great Arsenal teams, and you're playing against them, you're like, wow, look what he just done. He let you through his legs. He turned with the outside of his right foot and then done a 1-2 and ran in behind. You learn a lot of better players that are better than you by playing against them, watching videos, and then you try and do that stuff in training. And then if it comes off in training, you're comfortable to do it in the game. So from the Gabriel Bonlahor that made his debut against Everton away to the one that played under Martin O'Neill and under Paul Lambert and McLeish, there was so much difference in first touch, left foot finishing, heading, strength, runs, receiving the ball to feet and turning. You know, like I was just learning more every game, every season from different coaches and playing more in the Premier League.
Can we warm you up with a couple of quick fire questions? Regular listeners to this series will know that we do this to sort of get a quick hit of the main headlines before we dive in. So the things that come to mind as soon as I ask these, just wrap them out to me. Gives us a sense of who Gabriel Bonlahor is. What was your favourite goal?
So my favourite goal was, because of the rivalry, my first ever goal against Birmingham City at St Andrews. I think it was just an amazing feeling for me and something I'll never forget.
Now Young. Agbon Lahore! An unbelievable finish! Agbon Lahore, saviour with a goal line clearance from Liam Ridgewell at one end, scores what could be the winner at the other!
What was that feeling like when the ball hit the back of the net? A lot of people talk about not being able to replicate that in retirement. I'm sure that's something you can't bottle.
You know what it was? It was the whole game and the whole... So, for instance, I was on the line for corners and Ridgewell had a header. He was an ex-Villa player and he had a header and I reached with my right foot to clear it off the line. So even that adrenaline was like, well, I'll stop the goal here. Then a few minutes later to go on the opposite end in front of the away fans, the Villa fans, and get that header, which when I look back now, I think Mike Taylor would be disappointed he didn't save. But
still
just that
them.
Feeling, just but that feeling of like, wow, it's gone in. Like, wow, like it's gone in. From growing up, and Villa were losing a lot of games to Birmingham City when I was growing up and in the U team, to finally get your chance to silence a full St. Andrews, which is a quite hostile stadium when it's full in a derby. And then just that feeling, you can't replicate, and I'll never get a feeling like that ever again.
Who was your favourite strike partner?
John Carew.
Hey, Bonnehot, chance to seal it towards Carew. 3-0. Wonderfully worked goal. And that seals the points for Aston Villa.
Big striker, strong. Won lots of flick-ons, but could play football as well. And for me, being the quick striker, the small striker, you know, I hadn't developed as a man yet. I was still a little boy. I was small and quick. So it was like big man, small man. You know, like the old school Premier League teams used to play 4-4-2. So it was like the big man. I was like the little quick man. And we just got on like a, do you know what I mean? We just got on well from the start. Mm. And I really enjoyed playing with him. I wish I played with him when he was a bit younger as well.
Which defender was your toughest opponent? Who gave you the most trouble?
You know what? Rio Ferdinand was a nightmare. I just remember, like, John Terry was tough, but Rio Ferdinand had the pace as well. Does that make sense? So yeah. John Terry was really, really tough to get past, but if there was space in behind, you could do him in behind. But with Rio, it was like, if you try and run him behind, he's getting there before you, because he's got them long, quick strides. You try and hold the ball up, he's got his big arms on your back, he's like, do you know what I mean? It was just the but nowadays you'd say like Van Dijk is similar and company was similar, but for me Rio was a nightmare. I mean, Ledley King was tough as well when he was fit, but Rio was just a nightmare. He'd beat you in a race, tackle you, do a step over, and then start running the opposite way, and you've got to chase him. So it was like, who the hell is this defender? He's like a bloody alien. So I didn't look forward to playing against Rio, not one bit. I don't think anyone did, to be honest.
Still to come on Up Front with Gabby Agbonlahor. He discusses the fierce rivalry between Birmingham City and Aston Villa.
Is it hatred? I think it is. As bad as it sounds, I think the fierceness of it, the abuse that I've got, it just makes you hate each other. It's just part of football, isn't it?
You're listening to Up Front with Gabby Agbonlahor on Talk Sport.
With a chance! Oh, it's 2-0! And this time it is Agbonlahor's goal! And it's the pace of Agbonlahor that makes all the difference.
People take different routes to success, don't they? Were you always a striker?
Yeah, I think I was always a striker from a young age at my Sunday league team because of my pace. You know, I was 3 times quicker than anyone. Like, you could imagine, when you see quick players at 18, 19, like, you got to think, what were they like at 7, 8? Do you know what I mean? Like, they were rapid. Like, I was one of them that was, like, that much quicker than everyone else. It was like, okay, just put him striker, because he's going to get in through in on goal a lot. You know, especially at a young age when there's no offsides and stuff. You know what I mean? You're just, like, running past everyone. So, yeah, I was always a striker. And, all the way through my youth.
Let's go back to like your first tentative steps at Aston Villa then in the youth team and coming through the ranks. I know you made your debut at 19, but who taught you to be a centre forward?
There was a guy called Steve Burns. He was one of my early coaches when I got scouted at Aston Villa. I was about 12, 13, 14 age. And yeah, just like doing different drills, you know. And I remember Gary Shaw and Mark Walters used to work at Villa, and we used to do a bit of striker coaching, you know.
Villa legends.
Do a little bit now and then. Yeah, Villa legends, especially Gary Shaw. He used to do a bit with me, and yeah, just learning a lot, really. But honestly, when I remember now, like, I was raw. I mean, As a young lad playing Sunday League, I was like raw. My pace got me to where I was. And then when I joined Aston Villa, it was like, all right, you're this quick lad, but now we've got to turn you into a footballer, not just a sprinter. So I was learning a lot every year in the U team, and then how to use my left foot better. And that's how I really like worked hard with coaches to master shooting my left foot, because I always knew at the highest level you need to be able to use both feet. You know, you're not going to always get to use your best foot. And I managed to score a lot of goals in my career with my left foot.
You don't mind a little bit of sort of banter with the Birmingham fans. You had some controversies along the way in your career. What were you like to teach as a kid? Were you, I mean, I think people have got a perception of you that you might have been quite a difficult kid to try and school. What were you like?
No, I was good, to be fair. You know what? I was in the youth team. The manager, which is a funny story. So imagine your parents are there in a youth team game, and the coach took me off after 10 minutes because I wasn't running around enough. So imagine your dad watching. My dad was fuming. I was on the bench like, geez, this is a ruthless, old-school Scottish coach. His name was Tony McAndrew.
Yeah.
He was like, you're lazy, so-and-so. Get off the pitch. You're not running around enough. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's probably not something they can get away with now. But back then, it was like, it's got to deal with it and then play hard in the next game. So I don't think I was hard to coach. I was probably just hard to get to do the jobs that youth team players had to do. Like when I done the balls, it was like, okay, the balls aren't done properly. You know, like the balls are too hard for the first team. The balls are too flat for the first team. It's probably things like that.
I bet you weren't great at cleaning boots, were you?
No. Especially them boots back in the day. Bloody hell. Gavin McCann's were the tiempos where you had to polish them once you'd washed them and dried them. So it was like, sometimes he'd come into me and be like, look at these boots. I'd be like, what's up with them? He's like, look, they're soaking wet still. I'm like, oh, okay, sorry. Like, you know, like, we weren't bloody boot cleaning geniuses. It was just something that we had to do part of our jobs in the youth team. But I think, like, football-wise, I was definitely fine to, like, teach and coach because I was breaking records. I mean, I broke Darius Vassell's record of scoring, of goal scoring in a season.
What about school, then? If you were good on the football field, what were you like in the classroom?
You know what? I was that scared because my dad's, like, an old-school Nigerian man and you didn't have a choice to be naughty at school. Even if you wanted to, you wouldn't because you knew the punishments would be so severe when you got home. Do you know what I mean? That's the way I was brought up of, like, you ain't being naughty. Fair enough, you might not be the cleverest, but you're not being naughty. So I never got a parent's evening report which says Gabby is disturbing in class, Gabby's naughty. No way. Primary school, I was really clever, but secondary school, once I got into the Villa Academy, I sort of dropped off, which was then bad for me. But I was just obsessed with football, you know, like nothing else mattered. And, like, I was just that obsessed with football and that determined to make it. I was like, I'm going to be a footballer. People would be like, no, you're not. People in school would be like, no, you're not. You need to do your education. I was like, I remember doing GCSEs and sitting there, not having a clue what any of it was about. Do you know, like, I was just, like, reading the test and just sitting there waiting for the time to finish, like, so I'm going to play football. I mean, I didn't pass any GCSEs. I didn't do any coursework. And my dad sort of let me off because I think he's seen a player in there.
When you broke into the first team at Aston Villa, it was almost because they didn't really have a choice, did they? I mean, they were run out of numbers.
No.
You'd been to Watford and Sheffield Wednesday on loan. You hadn't scored at that time. But tell me about that day at Everton.
Well, even like the loans, honestly, I went to Watford and I went to Sheffield Wednesday afterwards and I hated it. I was homesick. Do you know, like, a boy that's been, like, locked away in, like, a strict household and he's been sent to the Ramada Jarvis Hotel in Watford. Do you know what I mean? Like, I was like, what's going on here? I'm so homesick. I hated football when I come back from Sheffield Wednesday. I hated football. I didn't want to play football anymore. And then I come back and I was back with the reserves, you know, no sniff of the first team because it wasn't a successful loan. And then I got the told by the reserve team manager, the first team was going to train with them. And then I trained with them and then they're like, you're travelling? I was like, whoa, really? I'm travelling, okay. I think, I don't know what strikers there was, I can't really remember, but a lot of them were injured or ill. So I remember being told I'm starting the game. And I was like, oh, okay. And I just remember, like, my dad coming in the game, Goodison Park, and we were getting battered. I mean, we were 3-4-0 down, I can't remember. But I just remember Lee Hendry putting me through.
Aimed in towards Hendry, and touched on for Agbodlahor! It's a moment he'll never forget!
It was just a tame effort, really, from me. I think it was just like, okay, I'm having a shot in the Premier League. Do you know what I mean? Just have a shot. You're losing a game, but you've probably got a shot in the Premier League. You know what I mean? It might be your only chance. And when I look back now and I see the goal, even at the time, it was like Richard Wright dropped the clanger here. He went right through him and, like, not at speed. And I just remember scoring and celebrating and thinking, like, yeah, we've lost, but at least I've scored. You know, like, sort of like this little bit of joy out of the game because I've scored as a 19-year-old. Do you know what I mean? And even when I look back today, I know for a fact I would not have had the career I'd had if I didn't score, because it would have been 19-year-old made his debut but didn't do anything in the game. Okay, then other strikers are back in. But because I scored, it was headlines. Do you know what I mean? Everyone wants to interview you, don't they? You know, like, you can't not have them around the first team then. So I was around the first team for the rest of the season.
And were you ready to play first team football at that stage? Really?
Just to be honest, mate, I remember that the loans that I went on, I was a bit like, whoa, there's a lot of fans here. I don't know, it's a bit nervous because there's fans actually watching now. Like, there's no hiding place. So I don't think I was at all, to be honest.
Beautifully taken. Martin O'Neill celebrates. The deadlock is broken, and it's the 19-year-old local boy who's put Villa ahead.
Very soon there was a change of manager. Martin O'Neill came in, took over from David O'Leary, giving you your debut. Did he immediately identify you as someone with potential?
Yeah, it was like he'd seen his long lost son who he'd finally been like, he'd finally got a chance to see. I mean, from day one, he was just like, you're playing here as a winger. He was obsessed with youth and pace, which most managers are, aren't they, even now? Do you know what I mean? It was like, well, okay, you're the quickest in the team. Do you know what I mean? I want to, like, get rid of some of the older players and the players that aren't as quick. This quick 19-year-old, I'm going to build my team sort of around him. Do you know what I mean? I played every single game. Not, I didn't have 1 second I didn't play that whole season.
How did that make you feel?
Like, amazing. It was so good because every game I was like, okay, I'm fine. I'm fine around these fans. I'm fine around 40-odd thousand at Villa Park. I'm fine. You know, like, I got confidence every game. And what Martin was good at was that this day and age, one good season, players might be getting like £80,000, £100,000 a week. What Martin done well at that time is he kept me hungry. He was like, to me and my agent, you're not getting big money yet. What you're going to do is you're going to get play 40 games, 40 starts, and you get renegotiation. So I was signing contracts every 14, 15 months, new contracts, because I was playing the games. Do you know, like, to keep me hungry?
Yeah.
Which was, like, something that maybe more teams should do now. And that's what Martin done. He was just like a father, really, a father figure to me. And every game I was getting better and better, and I was learning more and learning more.
At the end of that first season, around April, that's when you signed your first sort of real big contract, or a four-year contract. You committed your future to Aston Villa. What was going through your mind at that point? Do you think, I've made it here?
Yeah, 100%. Not that I think I'd made it. I just thought, this is what I'm talking about. Do you know, like you play the whole season, you've done really well, and it's like, okay, here's the real money's coming now. Do you know, like, the money is going to change my life, my family's life. I used to train with the first team sometimes under O'Leary, and I remember Freddie Boomer saying to me in training one day, you're going to earn £25,000 a week one day. I was like, whoa, really? I was like, he's like, yeah, you will, I can tell. And I was like, okay. I think I was like 18, just training with the first team. I hadn't made my debut yet, I was just training with them. But to hear that, I'm like, okay. And then just under Martin, to then play that whole season and then get a better contract, then play another season, get a better contract. I was felt part of the team. Do you know what I mean? And Villa fans took to me straight away as being a local lad and a Villa fan. And, like, the earning that money at that age, it was just like, whoa, wow, this is crazy money.
Did it change your life? Did it change your family's life like you thought it might?
100%, mate. Like, it was always cost-cutting at all times. It was, like, summer holidays, it was play football in the back garden and then go inside and make your own tins of tomato soup with bread that you lunch. To then get this money at that young age, it was like, okay, I'm going to enjoy myself, but my whole family's going to enjoy it.
Ashley Young then to pop it in. Carew, and Agbonlahor has scored! And he may well have snatched victory in the second City derby for Aston Villa.
You seem to have an attraction to scoring against Birmingham City. Was that a coincidence, or was it fueled by something deeper?
I think it was fueled by something deeper. I think Rangers-Celtic, the most rivalry. Then it's Birmingham City-Aston Villa. I don't care what anyone says, any fan that says, Man City-Man United, I've watched a lot of them games, and it doesn't look as fierce, nowhere near as fierce as the Birmingham City-Villa derby. Spurs, Arsenal doesn't. Do you know what I mean? The Villa Blues derby, it's like people are that nervous of giving the ball away and it going to lead to a goal that everyone's hooking the ball on. Do you know what I mean? It's not like a football match, especially the latter derbies are played in. No one's playing football. It's like kicking each other, lumping the ball. No one's going to get it down from the back and play. They're scared of losing it and then someone scoring. Do you know what I mean? They know how much it means. You can't make a mistake. So for me, growing up and seeing when Dion Dublin headbutted Savage and Lee Hendry getting into scraps in games and Enkelman when he went under his foot, it sort of built into me like, wow, if I ever get a chance and play in this game, I'm scoring. Like, I'm winning. Out of 9 league games, I didn't lose one. And it was just something that, like, if I'm in this team, we ain't losing. Is it hatred? I think it is. As bad as it sounds, I think the fierceness of it, the abuse that I've got when I played against them, the way they abuse my family and stuff like that, it just makes you hate each other. It's just part of football, isn't it? I just didn't want to speak to any of the players in the opposite team. It was like, I hate every one of you. You're playing for the more fierce rivals.
Do you have any friends that are Birmingham City supporters?
They're friends, but when I started to make my debut, they sort of changed to Villa fans, sort of, if that makes sense.
No, not really.
So they weren't hard. Yeah, they weren't hardcore Blues fans. They were sort of like, maybe the area they were brought up in was Blues. Do you know what I mean? It's a bit of like area codes in there in Birmingham. Certain part of the city, you'll be Villa because you were brought up there, and then others, you'll be Blues. But I don't think people understand a lot. I remember one of my friends, I won't name him, but when I retired, he said, would you play for Blues? If Blues offered you a deal, I says, are you joking? He was like, I'll play. You're getting more money. Why not? I was like, are you joking me? I actually nearly fell out with him as a friend because he couldn't understand why I would never play for Blues. I says, they could offer me 200 grand a week and I wouldn't play for them. Like, you don't understand the rivalry. And he's like, well, I would if I was playing because it's extra money. And I'm just like, what's going through people's minds? Like, do you know what I mean? Money isn't everything. Like, you think I'd ever even, like, think about it? Not a chance. And he couldn't understand it. And I'm just like, I'm going to have to fall out of your ear because you're winding me up even mentioning it. You scored like 5 goals against them. You're the most hated Villa player ever to play the game, probably, by Blues fans. Vice versa, I don't like them. And what would I even think about playing for them? It was like, I can't believe you've said this to me as a friend.
Plenty more to come on Upfront with Gabby Agbonlahor as we find out if he regrets being a one-club man.
Sometimes I might look back and say, you know what, maybe if I left and went this club, I could have maybe played Champions League, or have had maybe all England caps, or would have won a trophy. But when I look back, I'm like, I'm proud to have been that one-man club.
This is Upfront with Gabby Agbonlahor and me, Sam Matterface, on TalkSport.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Thank you.
chance for four. It is. Gabriel Agbonlahor has got a hat-trick in the space of, what, 6 minutes, 7 minutes. It's a sensational start of the season for the young man. Villa 4, City 1. Gabriel Agbonlahor. Well, what an afternoon he's having.
You are the local boy. You're the Villa lad who now leads the line for his team. You're the boys' own and girls' own hero. If you could have an entrance music to come onto the field at Villa Park, what would sum you up?
At the early age, when I first started, I was really, really, really into Speed Garage, or really into hip-hop as well. So hardcore hip-hop, like Migos, Future, 2 Chainz, something like that.
Would you have been playing that sort of music the day you scored the perfect hat-trick against Manchester City?
Yeah, 100%. It would have been hip-hop, definitely. I remember after the game, I went to under-21s, so I would have been listening to that on the drive to the under-21 squad, definitely.
What was that day like, that City game?
It was crazy, you know. It was like everyone was buzzing for the first game of the season, you know, the sun shining. It's like, you know what I mean, this is the time Aston Villa are going to turn up this season. And I was sort of having a beast, to be honest. I'm not going to lie. I wasn't having a good game. Then, goals change things, don't they? It's not always how you play, is it? You can have an amazing game and not score, or a rubbish game and score a hat-trick. That's just football. And I think that's what happened that game. I think any other manager probably would have got took off. But because Martin O'Neill loved me, he was like, I'm not taking him off. Do you know what I mean? And then I got a chance to score one, then two, then the third one, and it was just like, wow, scored a hat-trick. Like, I'm in that bracket of people who have scored Premier League hat-tricks, and it was a quick one as well, wasn't it? I think it might have been third quickest of all time.
It is the third quickest of all time.
It's just something that you can't, something you can't take away from someone. You know, the ball's in my dad's house at the moment, signed by the whole team.
Sometimes being a striker is not just about goals, is it? Sometimes being a striker is about more than goals. Sometimes it's about scoring goals. Sometimes it's about goals that you aren't getting. You've gone through spells without scoring. How did it affect you?
Yeah. I always said to myself, I know my ability. I'm going to score. I'm going to score. You're going to go through this, but you're going to score. Just be like composed. Don't rush things. You'll score. And I always got over them times of not scoring. And that's the problem, because people say strikers, yeah, it's not all about scoring goals, but the critics are on you when you don't score. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Like, if you don't score for 6-7 games as a striker, they're not going to print, yeah, but he was amazing at the way he held the ball up, you know, he'd done some great crosses, he ran the channels tirelessly. Do you know what I mean? No one's going to write that stuff. They're going to write, okay, it's 8 games, it's 9 games, it's not scored, it's 10 games. So that's when you got to think to yourself, you know what, I've got to be a bit selfish here and get that goal, because then the pressure's going to be off and then I'm not going to be getting slaughtered worldwide.
His first goal in 13 games, and didn't he enjoy it?
What's it feel like when the goal drought ends?
I remember I didn't know how to celebrate. I think I forgot how to celebrate, and I scored and I sort of like rolled, threw myself to the floor and sort of rolled on the floor. It was crazy. It was like people used to say, like, oh, what was that celebration? It was a weird one. Because I hadn't scored that long, it was like the relief of, like, oh, I finally scored. Do you know what I mean? And it was quite a hard goal to score as well. I just remembered, like, yes, I've scored. Then the week after, I scored again. So it was like you get over that confidence of, like, not scoring. Then the goals just come. You get used to scoring again. But it's not a nice feeling when you're going through that time, because especially now, because it's worse now with social media. You know what I mean? You'll be the laughing stock of social media. You know what people are like in this generation? Oh, he's not scored again. Oh, he's not scored. Oh, he's not scored for a year.
And here is Ashley Young up against Fletcher. Half a yard cross, a goal. Agbonlahor scores again at Old Trafford. He makes a habit of doing that. And Aston Villa have a shock lead here.
In 2009-2010, you scored the goal that sees Villa register their first win at Old Trafford, in your lifetime anyway. It's 1983, I think, the previous time that they'd won there. Then you score in the semi-final against Blackburn of the League Cup to go to Wembley to face United again. This is a major day for Villa, you know, going to a cup final.
Massive, yeah.
Haven't done it for years. Major day for Villa fans, I'm sure your family as well. What are the emotions like flowing through you on a day like that?
It was crazy because at that time, we had a great team, you know. We lost Barry, but we still had a great team, you know. We still had a strong team. We We beat Man United in the league, and we beat them because we were better than them at Old Trafford, not because we were holding on. We were better than them, you know. Then we got to the final, and we were confident we could win. You know, I always fancied myself against Vidic, like, you know, like pace-wise. I knew there was space in behind, I could outrun him. So I get through, given a penalty, and you're like, how is it not a red card? Do you know what I mean? For the next 100 years, Villa fans will remember, like, how was that not a red card? When I look back at that game, and Villa fans look back at that game, we should have won that. And I think we were cheated by the ref, who I've never forgive for it.
Do you keep any mementos of that game?
I was saying this to my friend the other day. Every time I lost in the final, I know it might be a bit sharp, but I threw my medal sort of down the stairs on the way down the tunnel. Do you know what I mean? I never wanted to keep anything to show my kids, okay, this is when I lost in the cup final. This is when I lost in the cup final. That's not something I ever wanted to keep. I never had that mentality of, like, keeping a runners-up medal. I was just that angry at losing a cup final. I was like, I don't want this. Get away from me. Get it off of me. I'm not putting it on my neck. And some people might say drunk, but some people might say, you know what, that's the mentality that maybe other players have had as well, and they went on and won stuff.
Villa started to have off-field issues after that. Martin O'Neill resigned the following August. What was your thought when you heard that he was leaving?
I could sort of tell he was going to go because he was sort of like losing his temper in training and little things and that I've never seen him do before. You know, I think he was frustrated of not getting the money to make the squad finally get the top four. You know, we weren't far off. It was so frustrating for me because Martin had been so big for me, you know, and he was like my dad. And then to hear that he's left, I was like, whoa, what do you mean he's left? But at that time, Randy Lerner just maybe decided that I've had this fun project, you know, I've pumped all this money into it. I haven't got the returns. I may be losing millions and millions. And that's what happens, isn't it? Some owners, they're not in it for the long haul, are they? It's like a bit of fun and a bit of like a business. And if you're losing money in a business, you're going to cut your losses, aren't you? And that's what I think Randy did with Martin. And then ever since that day, Aston Villa were just a selling club. Everyone got sold.
Did you have many interactions with Randy Lerner? And as a Villa fan, did you have sort of conflict inside you that you had this owner that was obviously it was a plaything for him, but for you, it was your club.
Yeah, but you know what? I really got on well with Randy Lerner. He was really good to me. You know, every time I scored, he messaged me saying, "Well done, Gabby. Thank you." For me as a player, I'm thinking like, in my mind, I'm thinking like, "Well, could you just sell the club then? Like, do you know what I mean? Let someone else come in and." Let's stop being a selling club and selling everyone. I mean, we're losing Barry, we're losing Milner, we're losing Young, we're losing Downing, then we lose Delph, then we lose Benteke, and it's like, what's going on here? Like, eventually you're going to go down. If you keep selling your best players, it's eventually going to happen, isn't it?
How did you find working under Gerard Houllier?
You know what? I think I've done a piece on Gerard Houllier, but that was just me at that time being like, I don't know, a bit of a spoilt brat of like, you know, because I wasn't playing under him. Mm. So I think any player who's not playing under a manager is not going to say anything good about them, are they? But for me, it was just being used to Martin O'Neill, and that's all I've known. Then a French manager to come in who was a bit arrogant and just a whole different sort of concept of the way football's played. He changed to a 4-5-1. I never played because it was Darren Bent got brought in, and then Ashley Young wanted to play in the hole, and then he'd play maybe Heskey on the left or Brighton and then Downing. So it was sort of like, I hadn't played left wing before. So it was a time in a season where I was on the bench a lot. So I was like a moody player on the bench. So I think at that time, I was never going to say anything good about him, was I?
Could you believe the number of managers you had in that last period at Aston Villa? 9 managers in 7 years. And that's not really including the caretakers.
I don't know. It was a project that was tough for any manager. I mean, I'll say to this day, Paul Lambert done wonders. He done absolute wonders with the squad he had. I was going through the players with my friend that we had at the time, and we stayed up on the Lambert, and we were overachieving massively with the squad that we had. We were buying players from League 2, League 1 in, not the top league in France, not the top league in Spain, not League 2 in England, like League 1 in England. Do you know what I mean? Like, players that it wasn't their fault, but they probably wasn't good enough at that time. Some of them had gone on to get better and better and have good careers, but at that time we were so overachieving, and I was just like, Randy Lerner was giving these managers a job that's not possible. That's why there were so many managers in and out, because it was such a tough job for them to do without the financial support.
Did all the changes unsettle you? Do you think it stopped you from becoming a better player?
I think definitely, and I think my loyalty probably cost me in the end. You know what I mean? I had chances to leave, but it was like, no, I'm not leaving. Randy Lennon probably thought, you know what, he's staying. Do you know what I mean? I remember when Paul Lambert came in, he was given the job to cut the wages at the club. Do you know what I mean? So anyone was on half decent money, they're out. And that's why he brought in, obviously, players on less money from lower leagues. And I was one of the highest paid, but I wasn't moved. It's because my relationship with Randy Lerner was like, okay, everyone can go but Gabby. Do you know what I mean? Mm. He's the like blood of the team. He's the local lad. He's the one that's got to stay.
Did you feel responsible then? And do you regret now not being maybe less loyal?
I don't regret it, you know, but sometimes I might look back and say, you know what, maybe if I left and went in this club, I could have maybe played Champions League, or maybe all England caps, or would have won a trophy. But when I look back, I'm like, I'm proud to have been that one-man club. I did feel like the pressure was on me. We've got these players that might not be as good as what you've been playing before, but we've got to go on with it. There's no money to spend. We've got to stay up.
That's a massive gear change, though, from what happened under Martin O'Neill, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. It was a massive change of, like, I'm playing in a team where we're going to Old Trafford, Chelsea, Arsenal, and we're like, okay, we can beat these. We're not scared of them. And we're beating them teams because of the talent in the squad, the heart. I mean, we used to have the most players from one team in England squads at one stage. Me, Milner, Barry Downing. Do you know what I mean? It's gone from that to, wow, we're going to the Etihad with this team. Oh, my God. It's like going into the Lions Den, the Coliseum, with, like, not many weapons. Do you know what I mean? That was the feeling of that time. It was like we're fighting every week. And I think we only stayed up for this time under Lambert because we were such a close team. Do you know what I mean? The banter with the team was close. We were a very close team. And I think that's why we stayed up.
Still to come on Up Front with Gabby Agbonlahor, he talks about how it felt to be left out of the starting lineup for the 2015 FA Cup Final.
And I was just so upset and so angry. And then for the game to start and we're 2-0 down so quickly, I'm watching from the side. I'm just like, I'm giving him evils, Sherwood. I'm just like, don't even look at me.
You're listening to Up Front with Gabby Agbonlahor on TalkSport.
Michael Oliver blows the four-time whistle and Tim's tactics tick the box at Wembley. In January, they were looking like relegation candidates, but just 4 months later, Aston Villa are going to an FA Cup final for the first time in 15 years.
In 2015, Aston Villa get to an FA Cup final, a trophy that the club hasn't won since 1957. It's the first final for the club in 15 years. The buzz around the city was non-stop. The BBC even revived the traditional whole day of programming for this cup final. The team had beat Liverpool in the semi-final. Jack Grealish had been absolutely immense during that period. What was it like for you being told you weren't starting the final?
Oh, God. Honestly, like, what had happened is I'd pulled my hamstring. I was having, like, when Sherwood come in, I was on fire under him, you know, and I loved him. And I pulled my hamstring against Spurs. So it was like, I think it might have been 3 weeks before the semi-final.
Yeah.
So there's me, like, getting every sort of bit of treatment possible, rushing to get back for the semi-final. And then I remember Sherwood putting me in the office and saying, like, you're not fit enough to play. You know what I mean? Hamstrings too soon. We can't risk it. You know, we still need to stay up, sort of thing. Like, are you joking me? Like, it's Wembley, semi-final, Liverpool. I'm not playing. But I listened to him. When I found out I'm not playing the final, I'm like, what are you talking about? I sort of fell out with him. I was like, how dare you? Do you know what I mean? Like, he's like, I know, but look at how the team played against Liverpool. I can't leave Nzogbia out. I did understand it from that point of view. Do you know what I mean? In my head. But in my head, I was thinking, this is a different game. When we beat Arsenal that season, at the start of the season under Lambert, we played as a counter-attack team and we beat them. I got two penalties in the game from two good runs.
Gabby Agbonlahor. A wonderful second half of the season. He stepped away from Kiscielny. Agbonlahor goes down. Andy Vyman hits the side netting. Referee says penalty.
I was just like, you got to play me. You're like, you can't do this to me. Do you know what I mean? And I was just so upset and so angry. And then for the game to start and we're 2-0 down so quickly, I'm watching from the side. I'm just like, I'm giving him evils, Sherwood. I'm just like, don't even look at me. when I come on, it was like, it was too late. I mean, I got took out for a penalty, it wasn't given, but it was too late. Arsenal were just such a great side then, and I was just upset, to be honest. And then I remember after the game, I was just like, to the fitness coach, I was like, don't give me anything to do in the summer, leave me alone, I don't speak to anyone. I was so angry still after the game, and I sort of like didn't hang around, and I was just like, you know what, I'm gone for the summer.
Did you repair that relationship with Tim after that, or was that the
moment? It was me and Tim Sherwood still speak now, like we were fine. It was just sort of like, okay, a day later, I'm over it now. Do you know what I mean? It was just at that time, and that's what managers want to see, don't they? They don't want players to not want to play. He would have buzzed off that. Then pre-season started, we were fine, bantering. Like, I loved him, to be honest. And I still say today, we wouldn't have got relegated if he stayed, because everyone was on side with him. Everyone loved Tim Sherwood.
Steve Bruce eventually came in. There was a few managers in between, again. But once Steve Bruce comes in, he says he's going to give you a clean sheet because Remy Gard didn't fancy you, etc., etc.
Yeah.
Did you think, I'm going to thrive again under this guy?
The time before Bruce, Remy Gardy and Di Matteo, I was going through some dark times off the pitch that people don't really know about. You know,
really?
I was in the papers every few... Yeah, I was in the papers a lot with different women and, you know, different things about women and myself in the paper. And the paper was sort of bullying me, to be honest. I think I was on the front page of the paper 3 days in a row. I'm thinking to myself, there's so many things going on in the world and you're bothered about me. Do you know what I mean? Like me, like Gabby from Birmingham, like, come on. And then
but that is the scrutiny that comes with being a Premier League footballer. Do you still angry about it?
I'm still angry, but I do get it. But then I still think, like, come on. There's, like, A-list celebrities out there, things going on in the world. Do you know what I mean? There's more to talk about than me. And it affected me sort of like during that season we got relegated. I wasn't training. I was putting on weight because I was like sort of had depression because of the stuff in the papers and people knowing my private life. And then, do you know what I mean? So that affected me that season. And then Di Matteo come in. I got myself fit pre-season because I wanted to repay and get the team promoted. Di Matteo told me the day before the season started, after I was the fittest I've been in years, okay, we don't want you. So I'm like, all right, Di Matteo, well, I'll see you out, mate. That's what I said to him in the office with the owner. I said, I'll see him out. So I'm not going nowhere, Roberto. Then that's what I did, you know. Then Bruce come in a few
didn't
months
take
later.
That long, really,
then, exactly, mate. Like, it happened overnight, but he was useless, Di Matteo. But Bruce come in then, and like, Steve Bruce is old school, you know. Like he knows, you know what I mean? He knows, like, what's going on. And he just said to me, you know what, you need to get fit. Because under Di Matteo, I'd been sent to the reserves. I was walking a 10-minute walk every day to train with the under-23. So I wasn't looking after myself because I sort of went back into depression from the season before. Do you know what I mean? So I got myself fit pre-season, then told I'm not wanted. So I'm like, all right, naturally, you're not going to be like at your fittest, are you? And then Steve Bruce come in and said, you know what, after the first training session, he's gone, you're not fit enough to be involved yet. Let's get you on a program. Let's get you fit. Get your match fit. Get you some reserve team games. And then you'll be back involved. And that's what happened. I wasn't the same player, to be honest. And that's me being truthful. Do you know what I mean?
Why?
I was like,
because of what happened off the pitch?
I think, like, what had happened off the pitch, what had happened with me losing my fitness. And, yeah, you can get your fitness back. But I think in that period, I think I'd lost a yard. My body felt like it had aged within, like, a year, year and a half. I was just getting niggling injuries. I was just like, okay, I'm injured again. I'm on a treatment table again. Okay, I'm back. Okay, I'm on a treatment table again. Do you know what I mean? So that's why that season I didn't get a new deal, because I didn't deserve it. And that's me being truthful.
And when you look back now, do you have any regrets? Are there things that you wish you hadn't done? Were there things that you thought were overblown and they shouldn't have been reported? Or, yeah, I mean, you didn't turn up for a Stuart Pearce for training camp, did you? I mean, I bet he was cross about that.
You know what's funny about that? I was talking to my friend about that. That was Martin O'Neill's fault, by the way, because it was my first season in the Premier League. Played every minute of every game. Do you know what I mean? I know I'm young and you can't moan about needing a rest, but I sort of needed a rest. I was like, maybe a year too early for me for the 21 to have some good strikers then. So I wasn't going to be starting. I was going to be on the bench. So I thought, do I really want to go to this tournament and not get the rest I need for the next season? But that was Martin O'Neill's job, because we'd agreed it with Martin O'Neill to tell Stuart Pearce. But typical Martin didn't tell anyone. At that time, I was on the beach in Dubai. and I come back and there was cars outside my house with cameras. And I'm like, what's going on? Didn't Martin tell you? So it wasn't me being AWOL, just a communication error. You know what I mean? So I don't have any regrets from that. And I think Stuart Pearce understood that. And I was in the next squad the next season. But I think over my career, you're always going to have regrets. Did I take care of myself as I should have? Not really, over the whole of my career. But the latter stages, it started to catch up with me. Off the pitch, I was a party boy. Do you know what I mean? Which caught up on me. So I think definitely there's regrets in the way maybe I wasn't as professional as I should have been. Maybe I would have played longer at my peak if I'd more been more professional, or maybe more England caps or this. But when I do look back, I'm still proud of what I did achieve, you know, to be the record goal scorer for Aston Villa in the Premier League, which will take some beating for a while. 3 England caps. I think I was involved in 15, 16 England call-ups. And to just have the career that I did have, to play in the Premier League for 11, 12 seasons, you know, so definitely do have regrets, but still proud at the same time.
At the end of these interviews, we've been testing out centre forwards to see how well you sort of know yourself. We've got 3 questions all about you. We call it our perfect hat trick. First question for you is, when you made your first appearance in pro football for Watford, who did you come on to replace against Coventry City?
Trevor Benjamin.
Trevor Benjamin, correct. Well done.
I lent him £500 when I was on loan. I still got it back. I need to get in touch with him.
It's all right. We can do that service for you. Here you go. The first goal that you scored for
10%, you can have it.
It was against Everton. I've got nowhere to spend it at the moment. But who did you score your first goal of the next season against? It was your first goal under Martin O'Neill.
Charlton at home.
Correct. 2-0.
Beautifully taken. Martin O'Neill celebrates. The deadlock is broken, and it's the 19-year-old local boy who's put Villa ahead.
Who once described you as a nightmare to play against? John Terry, after a game against who?
Chelsea?
It was Germany. I think he was in the same team as you that day.
Virgil had to cut that one out, but it's gone through to Gabriel Ekbonlahor. Can he pick out Carew? Doesn't need him, it's 5. All his own work as well. It's Gabriel Ekbonlahor. He's in double figures for the season.
You've been listening to Upfront with Gabby Ekbonlahor and me, Sam Matterface. And if you've missed any of the show or want to catch up, you can download the podcast from the TalkSport Game Day feed, available on Apple Podcasts, Acast and Spotify.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.